This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. All along the Civic Media Radio Network, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you. Matt and Brett here today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Talking to you live across the network. Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison. WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus. WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM. The Shaw, as well as AM 950, the progressive voice of Minneapolis, St. Paul. Hiya. Good to have you with us here today. We've got a lot going on. We do not call this a Democrat of the Day because a little bit later on in the 4 o'clock hour, the Hennepin County Attorney's race, which is actually a huge race because of especially what's happened after George Floyd, the latest candidate from that. So it's going to be our candidate of the day, Ryan Winkler, who currently is the House Majority Leader in Minnesota. He is running for that race. We'll talk to him about his campaign coming up a little bit later on. I've got some amazing Friday dancing music coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour as well. And we'll do our festival roundup in a little bit here. But Brett, I got an interesting, it is summer. And for, you know, there's a lot of horror movies that are coming, that come out during summer. The latest is a heck of a one, Nope, which everyone says is amazing. Everyone who's seen it, I think it's actually got, it's maybe not like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's like high 80s, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Do you know that movie? Have you seen the trailers for that movie?
No, I haven't actually seen many of the trailers.
It seems, I don't know, trailers can be deceptive. It seems to be dealing with UFOs.
Oh, and it's a Jordan Peele movie. This is going to be a good one then.
Yes, it's going to be the highest rated or highest grossing original film since the pandemic began. So that's kind of the expectation, is this is going to be the highest grossing original film since the pandemic began. It brought up an interesting question. I was driving around today with my daughter, one of her friends, Anna, who is just delightful, one of those kids that loves horror films. And Anna is good people. She likes horror films. Scream is her favorite. She was talking about this. And we started talking about this, and I've actually been thinking about this throughout the rest of the day today. What is my favorite horror films? Up to this point, do you have a horror film that's your favorite one, Brett?
Oh man, if I were to pick a favorite, I don't know if I quite put Scream in there.
My Dinner with Andre. Oh, yeah. The appetizer scene. What are you doing? That fork is not supposed to be there, my friend.
Yeah, I'd have to think about there. There's so much to choose from because I'm a big fan of horror movies too. But just picking one, yeah, I'd have to think.
I came up with four that I thought are ones that I can watch if they're on. I'm stopping and I'm watching. It's just that it is. I'll save the best one, though, for the end. I'll start with kind of the no-duh, Jaws. We forget that's a horror film. I would say that's a horror film. But it's just it's based on a very realistic thing. That movie is still today as scary as ever. The way they shot that, and once again, the whole trick about that one is that it was, because they couldn't get the shark to work, they ended up having just to film it as kind of you would see it on the water. So it ended up becoming a much better film, actually. Phenomenal film. I enjoyed that a lot. I also enjoy that a lot because I was born in Minnesota, Minneapolis, but I moved to Rhode Island as a young kid. And they filmed Jaws at Block Island, a good portion of that in Block Island, right off the Rhode Island coast. And that movie played back in the day when you had one or two screens per theater. That thing played in Rhode Island for 2 years. It was the number one movie on most marquees there for 2 years. So Jaws, It Follows. Have you seen that brilliant piece of film?
Yeah, that's
it's
a good.
That one where it's about sexually transmitted diseases, but they made it into a horror film and it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I have watched that movie multiple times, and every time it seems like I get something new from that. I'm like, God, they were really thinking with that one. Very enjoyable. I got this is a deep cut, and I know there are some fans who people who've talked to me about this movie on this show and messaged me about this. The original Salem's Lot with David Soul. Okay. It is a 1970s film. It was made for TV, which that, I mean, how many nightmares did you create with that one? The jump scares in that movie are as good as they've ever been in any movie. Have you seen that one?
No.
Got to go see that. The jump scares in that film are amazing. Could be the best adaptation of a Stephen King book, I think. I don't know. I mean, I would say there's been a lot. The Stand, that TV miniseries they did on The Stand was quite good too. So it's hard to say. But number one for me, my favorite horror film of all time, not even close. John Carpenter's The Thing. 1982, Kurt Russell. Guys in a frozen ice station, basically having to deal with an alien that can change shape and look like anyone else. Phenomenal. Best acted. It just is. There are still things about that movie every time I watch it that I didn't see before. And I've seen that movie probably 100 times. 100 times. John Carpenter's The Thing. You know which one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is Kurt Russell ever been – I mean, Kurt Russell, that was the best film he's done. I know the Santa Chronicles are fun and all that. But yeah. Overboard. Who doesn't love a good wacky comedy? Actually, Big Trouble in Little China is fantastic too.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I'd call that a horror film. But, you know, Kurt Russell, he's done a lot of good movies. That movie, that is – I think that's the best I've ever seen him in that movie. So as you've thought about this, any of those –
I would have to go the original id version from, what, a 1980 – not the one that was
87,
recent.
88?
Yeah, right around there.
Tim
yeah.
Reed was in that. I know yeah. who you're talking about. The guy that played John Boy in the Waltons was in that. Mm-hmm. That was the guy that was on Night Court mm-hmm. was on that. That was pretty good. It was Tim Curry as
– Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, Tim Curry's brilliant in that movie.
Oh, gosh, he's terrifying. Just terrifying. That's not a bad one. The more you say about it, it's like, okay, Salem's Lot, The Stand, and It, the original It. And by the way, I should say the original Salem's Lot, I do believe they did a remake of it, which was not nearly as good. Mm-hmm. But, those were all TV miniseries, weren't they? The original It was a TV miniseries.
I think it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. No, I might have to go find The Thing from John Carpenter. John Carpenter's The Thing again. That movie, I cannot not watch it. The way it's shot, everything, it's just perfect. It's a perfect horror film. And the special effects, it's 1982. Yes, they're a little dated. They're still pretty good. I'm not going to even say what that goes on there because that movie is wow. A lot of jump scares in that one too. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you're anywhere on the network, I mean, I'm presuming a lot of people are going to go see Nope tonight. You're more than welcome to chime in on that. Or if you have a movie that is a humdinger, that's your, you know, it's a horror film, I've got to watch it. And like I said, I thought about it. There could be other ones I just haven't thought about, but that I can't remember, but that's, yeah. John Carpenter's The Thing. I think that has to be it. That has to be it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Why not? Bob is in Northeast Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in. Hey, Bob.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Hey, when you mentioned John Carpenter, I thought you were going to go with the original Halloween, which I don't know if it's my favorite, but the whole scene of it, like, I was old enough to see it in the theater, and went with three pals, well, two buddies, and then Lisa, who's just amazingly cute. And we got there early, and we're standing outside the theater, and we are just hearing these sounds of horror happening. And it's not from the screen. It's the people screaming in the theater because of what they're watching. Ugh. And we're looking at each other, what are we getting into? And so we're sitting in there watching the movie and one of my buddies and, you know, we're about jumping into each other's laps because it was just so freaking over the top.
Well, and it's when I was talking to Anna about this today, that was a movie that came on out, and I love that movie. That movie is one of the few slasher films that's worth watching, if you ask me personally. But the problem that I think that for me, because I grew up in that age, every week there was a slasher film out, and most of them were just atrocious. And I mean, in John Carpenter's, Halloween, which I think, and thank you, Bob, I appreciate the phone call on that. I think they're having the final chapter of that movie coming out this fall. A lot of people are looking forward to that. But the John Carpenter's Halloween, it was good because, and I'd actually say this, I think Halloween 2 is actually pretty good too at the hospital. I thought that was a pretty good film. But I mean, of all the slasher films, yeah. I would say that was there because it's probably Halloween by John Carpenter. Definitely mentioned today. Definitely probably top 10 for me. Just not in that top upper echelon of the movies that I just – yeah, it was. I do love the fact that there's a Kirk mask. That's an inside-out Kirk mask. So that is one of my favorite elements of that movie. Okay, so funny story. I was earlier today, I get back, I sit down and said, I see the story. The Steve Bannon jury has gone into deliberations. I'm like, ah, crud. Are they actually going to be out of deliberations? Is this something that's going to happen during the show? Am I going to, and they're done. Before I was even saying, I wonder what I'm going to do here. I'll have to have Brett keep an eye out on the old news feed there in case they. Oh, and they're done. I didn't even have to wait. It took 3 hours to deliberate. Can I make the observation? Without a doubt in my mind, the only reason it took 3 hours is because the court wanted to give the jurors some lunch, and that is it. The only reason it took that long. FYI. Guilty. I'll tell you about that. Plus, we'll break down what happened to the January 6th committee hearing last night. How is this guy not arrested yet? How is he not arrested? And I understand it's tough, but you got to arrest the guy. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're so close. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Friday. Good to be with you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, get Dr. Joe saying the original Psycho. 9 years old in a crowded high school theater full of screaming girls. Well, back in the days when parents would, hey, let's take the kid to the R-rated film. There you go. Okay. Here's 20 bucks. Here's a buck for popcorn and a soda. Remember those days? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'd say this is breaking, but it basically broke a few hours ago because guilty, 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 guilty. A federal jury found former Trump advisor Steve Bannon guilty on two counts of contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena from the House and Select Committee investigating January 6th attack. Bannon now faces a minimum of 30 days in jail, according to federal law. Considering he was such a jackass during this trial, I would not be surprised if that ends up being like 45 days in jail. I don't think it's going to be too long, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was, a little bit longer. The conviction is a boost for the House January 6th committee's investigation and the congressional power of subpoena documents and testimonies. Also victory for the Justice Department, which is under intense scrutiny for its approach to matters related to the January 6th attack. After 2 days of hearing evidence and witness testimony, the jury reached a unanimous verdict in less than 3 hours. Less than 3 hours. U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols has set Bannon's sentencing for October 21st. Bannon faces a minimum sentence of 30 days in jail, according to federal law. So, okay, first of all, my guess is going to be that just because the real jackassian nature of your standard Republican is Steve Bannon's probably going to come on out. It's like, okay, now, all right, I'm willing to talk plea deal with you now. Oh, are you? All right. You're willing to plea now that you've been found guilty. That is your standard Republican, isn't it? Okay, fine. Fine, I'm guilty. So how do we let this go away? No, you're going to jail. It's a minimum of 30 days. And do me a favor. Don't send him to some freaking country club. Send him to county lockup. Send that guy into county lockup. Mwah! Or in district lockup. I guess it would be Washington, D.C., district lockup. Bon appetit. Have a nice day. It's the belligerence of this guy. You know, he was, you know, how he talked about it, he was going to thumb his nose at the whole thing. He was going to make it the biggest nightmare ever. And this is, by the way, this judge, Carl Nichols, is a Trump appointee. Is a Trump appointee. And he was like, okay, I've had enough of you. And one of the things about the closing arguments, I have never heard of this. It's rare. You'll get an objection during closing arguments at all. There were four objections that were all sustained in the closing arguments. That Bannon was basically throwing every conspiracy theory at the book, at the wall. And then when they said he can't do that, the point was he was trying to hope that there is someone on that jury is a QAnon MAGA kind of guy. This is my last plea. You MAGA, Q anybody? Nope. The only reason that took 3 hours is because they wanted to give him lunch. I guarantee it. Because that's kind of one of those things where if you go in, you're a jury on a trial, it's the least they can do if you have to come in that day to make sure you get some lunch. So they probably, my gut feeling is, okay, we'll close the door here. You guys let us know when you're ready to tell us the verdict. All right, we're there back already. Okay, that was pretty speedy. Tell you what, it's 10:15. You guys want to wait around till 11 o'clock and the Subway shop delivers? We'll get you some sandwiches and then you can sit and eat, you know, talk about the Orioles or the Washington Nationals, whatever you guys want to do, you know. Yeah, whatever. And then we can go in there. Yeah, gosh. Bannon is just a horrible person. But one of the things that we've come to realize with the January 6th committee is that there were a lot of cowards, in that White House, that Trump had a plan. His minions that were willing to do anything for him were the what was the term that the Cipollone used for the crew that showed up for the legal briefing on December 17th? What was that term he used? The circus of idiots or something like that. That was his enabling group. Steve Bannon was part of his enabling group. Fox News was part of his enabling group. Christina Bob was part of his enabling group. Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Michael Flynn. These were people that were hoping to be installed as the commandant of Delaware or the Archduke of Oregon or something of that nature when this was all when the government was overthrown and they were installed in power. And that's what these people thought they were going to be. But the reality is that it's even sadder because of the remaining people. And I mean, I'm still torn on whether Mark Meadows is in that first group. I think he actually is. I think he was part of the coup attempt. But there was a lot of people in the White House who sat there and watched as this guy just went out of control. And not only, I mean, he clearly was sold on this. And it should be noted the reason why Donald Trump did the I love you, it's time to go home, is because those people were about to get slaughtered by the National Guard. The National Guard had been activated. Finally, military leadership took over and said, yeah, we can't have this anymore. Because that's another big question. The Secretary of Defense clearly was in on the coup. Trump's Secretary of Defense was clearly in on the coup. The fact that you had people, the Speaker of the House, the Senate Majority Leader, you had the Republican leaders of Congress, you had the Vice President, the Republican Vice President, all screaming at the military, get out here. And I let me back up for one quick second, because I did say the military. I do have to give credit to the Republican governor of Maryland and at that time the Democratic governor of Virginia, who basically were watching this and saying he's not going to call them up. So they called up their own National Guards, had them massed at the border to D.C., was about to send them in themselves to defend democracy. That's when finally the Secretary of Defense said, fine, we'll activate the National Guard. And it was at that point where all of a sudden all of Trump's little buddies were about to get slaughtered out in front of the Capitol, which, frankly, as a military guy, I don't take any pride or joy in people dying. I don't. But when you have enemies, both foreign and domestic, yeah, you've got to do something. You've got to do something. It was only at that point that all of a sudden that Trump all of a sudden, I better try to save these people. Ashley Babbitt, you got what you deserved. You're a traitor to America, Ashley Babbitt. You got what you deserved. Because if I was on guard point, I've said this before, if I was on guard duty in the U.S. House and that person was swimming through the window, I'm dropping you. That's what you do. That's what military does. It defends this country. More on this when we come back. Matt McNeil's show on a Friday. It is the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. You know, some people will say, you know, Matt, I mean, I just, that last segment, I get fired up. I get fired up. I'm U.S. Army. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Army. You don't allow that stuff to happen. You cannot allow that stuff to happen. And there's a duty by the Secretary of Defense that if Trump is not out there making the phone call, that you have to make that call yourself. And when it became clear that Capitol Police were overwhelmed, that they were being injured, they were being attacked, that the desecration of the U.S. Capitol was happening, then I'm sorry, boys, it's war, lock and load, and let's send the message here. I mean, it's not Kent State here, where people are out peacefully protesting and get gunned down. It was a clear attack on the Capitol. And I talked about Ashley Babbitt. All these people, like, she didn't deserve it. Nope, she did. Nope, 100%. They had barricaded the doors. They had busted the window open. She had been told to stop. She was coming through the window. She wasn't there to deliver her list of grievances. No, bullcrud. She was there to attack. And she eagerly went through the window. If I was on that guard station and I had given those warnings and she came through the window, I would have dropped her in a heartbeat. That man was a hero for saving the Capitol and saving the U.S. House at that point, and the representatives that were still in there, from a terrorist. That's all she is a terrorist. End of story. You can't even, don't even with me. No, that was a terrorist. And there was a lot of terrorists out there. Nope. The Secretary of Defense, they have some serious, serious questions on why they had to wait for Maryland and Virginia to basically threaten to invade D.C. to save the Capitol for an, okay, fine, I'm calling up all the National Guard, but it's still going to be 3.5 hours. I'm sorry, you got military bases all around D.C., you got military troops that can be ready to go in 15 minutes. Go. Get those big helicopters. Have them coming down off that, streaming down off that. And, you know, you start putting people in cuffs and dragging them out of there. They didn't do that because they were there for Trump. And everything you saw last night, everything you saw, this reluctance, this, The fact that he was trying to grab the steering wheel, the fact that when it came time to say, I lost the election, he couldn't do it because he was still trying to find ways to figure out somehow that he could have overthrown the government and installed himself as president. Let's look at the findings that we got last night. First of all, how Trump chose not to act. The committee used Thursday's hearing to show how Trump not only failed to act, but chose not to as he watched the violent assault of the U.S. Capitol unfold. He can't argue he didn't know. He was watching it. He was watching it as it unfolded. Just so happy. He was a he was. I don't want to say he was a toddler who went to the bathroom in his diaper. He was a 15-year-old kid that went to the bathroom in his diaper. Like, look what I did. I did something great, didn't I? Isn't that great? Something wrong with that guy. Several witnesses with the firsthand knowledge of what was happening inside the White House on January 7th told the committee – on January 6th told the committee that Trump did not place a single call to any of his law enforcement or national security officials as the Capitol attack was unfolding, according to previously unseen video testimony played during Thursday's hearing. The panel said it confirmed in numerous interviews with senior law enforcement and military leaders, Vice President Pence's staff, and the D.C. government officials, none of them, not one, heard from Trump that day. Self-gratifying in that room. The committee used that testimony to make the case that Trump's refusal to intervene amounted to a dereliction of duty, which it did. Former officials who were there with Trump as he watched the riot unfold on television, including then White House counsel Pat Cipollone and Trump body man Nick Luna, told the committee they had no knowledge of the former president making a single call to the heads of various agencies who could have responded to the violence, including the Secretary of Defense or the Attorney General. Keith Kellogg, Pence's national security advisor, who was also with Trump that day, testified that he never heard the former president ask for the National Guard or law enforcement response. Kellogg also reaffirmed that he would have been aware if Trump had made such an ask. Matthews, a former White House spokeswoman, said she spoke with White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany during the riot. McEnany looked directly at me and, in a hushed tone, shared with me that President doesn't want to include any sort of a mention of peace in a tweet that they were crafting. He once again shared with him that the president didn't want to include any sort of mention of peace. He wanted to overthrow the government. To me, his refusal to act on the call of the mob that day and his refusal to condemn the violence was indefensible, Matthew said at the hearing. Her testimony about her resigning that night was pretty powerful. That testimony fit with the other evidence presented on Thursday, like the outtakes of Trump's videotaped speech on January 7th, where he tried to water down some of the prepared language, told his aides, "I don't want to say the election is over, okay? It was over, you dumbass." God, he just, it was over. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mike Milley, told the House Select Committee that he was astonished by the fact that he never heard from Trump as the Capitol attack was unfolding, suggesting his failure to act amounted to an abdication of his duties as commander-in-chief, according to previously unseen video from the closed-door deposition. "You know, you're the commander-in-chief. You've got an assault going on in the capital of the United States of America, and there's nothing, no call, nothing, zero," he said in the clip. "Because we never imagined a sitting president would be the person behind the insurrection attempt because they lost the election. Because petty little Trumpy's little ego got hurt because he lost. He had a boo-boo kitty meltdown." I'm sorry. Part of me wants to grab that orange buffoon by the collar and smack him a few times across the face. How dare you do this? Just a pathetic. He is a guy that his entire life has never been told no. And the country told him no. And he had a petulant little temper tantrum by sending out his thugs to go attack. "You know, the commander-in-chief, you've got an assault going in the capital of the United States of America. There's nothing. No call, nothing, zero," he said in the clip. Disturbing audio of the Pence security detail. Thursday's hearing featured new and disturbing video and audio showing how endangered Pence security detail felt as they tried to evacuate the vice president from the Capitol. The committee painted the fullest picture to date of the danger facing Pence and his team as rioters called for hanging Pence when he refused to go along with Trump's effort to try to overturn the 2020 election. Now, by the way, one quick side note here. There's multiple people that have brought forward the notion that the main goal of Trump was to get the House and the Senate out of the Capitol, to get Pence out of the Capitol, and then prevent Pence. This is one of the reasons why Pence did not want to get in that vehicle with a driver he had never seen before, is because the feeling was they were going to drive him away and refuse to take him back to the Capitol so he couldn't certify the election results. Plus, the Senate and the vice president all seemed to know that this seemed to be a possibility, and all of them decided to stay at the Capitol because they knew that if this was the case, this was going to be the argument was, oh, they all left. It was over. They didn't certify. The committee The committee painted the fullest picture today of the danger facing Pence and his team as rioters called for the hanging of the vice president. Once again, encouraged by the president of the United States encouraged a mob to hang his vice president. When he refused to go along with Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election, the committee's witness testified that Pence's detail was so concerned with what was transpiring, they were starting to fear for their own lives, their calls to say goodbye to family members. The witness was an unidentified national security professional who worked with the White House on January 6th, whose audio testimony was masked to shield the official's identity. Is the VP compromised? Like, I don't know. We don't have visibility, but they're screaming and saying things like, say goodbye to family. This is going to a whole other level soon, the national security official said. The House Select Committee also revealed for the first time Secret Service radio traffic as agents assessed the Senate stairwell where Pence would be evacuated, where rioters were confronting police in the hallway downstairs at the same time. The video played Thursday spliced together the surveillance tapes of the security footage and sound of Pence's detail, bringing into focus how near a miss Pence and his detail experienced. They then went on to paint the picture of Pence fairly, and I mean, I don't agree with the guy, but at least his presidential-esque actions that day versus Trump's sitting there with his thumb up his caboose. One focus of the Select Committee's hearing was the presidential actions that were taken on January 6th, not by Trump, but by Pence. The committee emphasized how Trump did not try to call law enforcement or military officials on January 6th, while Pence, whose life was endangered by rioters, worked the phone, speaking to Milley and then acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller. The committee played a video of Milley's deposition where he said he had two or three calls with Pence. He was very animated. He had issued very explicit, very direct, unambiguous orders. There was no question about that, Milley said. He was very animated, very direct, and very firm to Secretary Miller. Get the military down here. Get the guard down here. Put down this situation. So once again, Miller, the Defense Secretary Miller has to explain why he refused to protect the U.S. Capitol. And that's it. Why did you refuse to protect the U.S. Capitol? Luria painted a direct contrast with what Trump did on January 6th. The president did not call the vice president or anyone in the military, federal law enforcement, or D.C. government, not a single person. The committee's comparison between Trump and Pence underscores how Trump is still angry with his vice president over January 6th. Politically, Pence has gone against Trump in several primaries ahead of the possible 2024 presidential contest. The former vice president has endorsed Republicans who reject Trump's false claims of fraud, including Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, who defeated a Trump-backed primary challenger. The committee, which counts two anti-Trump Republicans as member, Kinzinger and the vice president, committee chairwoman, Liz Cheney, has painted Pence as one of the key officials who stood up to Trump after he lost the election. The committee also included Thursday a clip of Joe Biden on January 6th condemning the violence, in which it was a subtle nod to Biden's acting presidential before in comparison to Trump, who was actually the president at the time. They went after the congressional Republicans, and this is brilliant to a point. The committee actually threw several sharp elbows at Republicans during the Thursday hearing, taking on House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. The committee played audio clips which have been disclosed previously where McCarthy spoke of his conversations with Trump after January 6th and said he was considering advising him to resign. The committee also played video clip from the deposition of Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in which Kushner said that McCarthy was scared and the unfolding evidence of the Capitol when the two spoke on phone on January 6th. In the additional, the panel spotlighted Senator Josh Hawley, the Missouri Republican, who led the Senate's objections to the election results on January 6th. The panel showed a well-known photo of Hawley raising his fist to the rioters outside the Capitol the morning of January 6th. Immediately afterwards, the panel played the video showing Hawley running for his life out of the Senate chamber, played it a second time in slow motion for emphasis. Later that night, Hawley forced a debate on the Pennsylvania election results and voted against certifying them because he's a traitor to this country. Josh Hawley, and apparently a bit of a runner. He's got a little hobby there. There's a lot of ways to stay in shape, you know, running for your life after the crowd you encourage to attack actually does. They also corroborated Hutchinson's testimony. This was actually pretty good, too. The January 6th committee on Thursday provided new evidence to back up the explosive testimony of former White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson, who publicly described Trump's angry interactions with the Secret Service detail after Trump was told he could not go to the Capitol. Luria said the committee had informed had information on two additional sources to partially corroborate Hutchinson's testimony that Trump lunged at his Secret Service detail. One of the witnesses, Luria said, is a former White House employee with national security responsibilities. While the individual was not named, Luria said the official testified that Tony Ornato, then Trump White House Deputy Chief of Staff and current member of the Secret Service, told him the same story that Hutchinson testified Ornato had told her, that Trump was irate when Roger Engel, the Secret Service agent in charge of January 6, 2021, would not take him to the Capitol. A second witness was retired D.C. Police Sergeant Mark Robinson, who was on Trump's motorcade that day. Robinson testified that Secret Service agents responsible for the motorcade had said that Trump had a heated discussion with his detail about going to the Capitol. Robinson added that he'd been in over 100 motorcades with Trump. Never heard of that type of exchange before January 6th. Hutchinson's testimony about Trump lunging at the Secret Service detail has become a key point that Trump allies have tried to use to discredit the investigation. But now we've got more people saying it actually happened. Ugh. Did we get confirmation on the ketchup toss? The hamburger being thrown against the wall? I have that's the hardest part to believe, because that dude does not turn down food. And that's, oh, I could never hurt you, cheeseburger. Take a break, come back. Matt McNeil Show. Two other quick little points here about the January 6th hearing. One, a lot of photos showed, they showed a lot of photos, especially behind the scenes photos of Pence talking and the bipartisan head of Congress talking to Miller, trying to say, get the troops out here.
I'm sorry, busy right now. I'm having a sandwich.
I don't know what Miller was saying. And then finally, the Secret Service. There is a story out today. The Secret Service, they say that they've now focused it down. Okay, so reminder, it was a standard deletion protocol. That was their first thing, which only involved 2 days, apparently, in 2021, which, okay, that doesn't seem to make sense. Then it was a complete system update. Now it's actually been identified there was 10 Secret Service agents who seem to have deleted all their text messages from those 2 days. 10. This is a cover-up, folks. Let me make sure I'm very clear about that. Those 10 Secret Service agents, you all should be going to jail. Defense Secretary Miller, you need to go to jail. Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Mike Flynn, Steve Bannon, jail, 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 jail. I'd make an argument Christina Bob over at OAN probably needs to go to jail, too. I would say the Proud Boy leader, the Three Percenters, all those terrorist groups that were there to attack the Capitol, they should all go to jail. Anyone that was advising Trump that this is the way to go, Eastman, all of them, jail. And at this point, how the hell you haven't filed charges against Donald Trump, I do not know. But Trump is guilty. And he needs to be arrested for attempting to overthrow this country. Donald Trump's name needs to live on like Benedict Arnold. It should be one of those names that when you say it, people are repulsed. People are disturbed. Oh, he's not that bad. This guy makes Nixon look like FDR, for God's sakes. He was a petulant little man-child who basically got told, you're one and done, get out of here. And he couldn't take, his ego couldn't take it. He had to figure out some way to win. So he tried to overthrow democracy himself to prevent himself from having a little pity party because he lost. He is anti-American. He is a traitor to this country. End of story. End of discussion. Absolutely. 952-946-6205. One thing we have done here on the Fridays, because of course it's nice to be on the network here. Hello to the folks down in Madison, Devil Radio down there, and WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus. Waukesha going on right now, 540 AM, 101 FM The Shaw, and of course AM 950 here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Nice to be on the network. I've enjoyed this. One of the things that I wanted to try to do is summertime. And at least while I'm doing shows through Labor Day, I'm going to continue to talk about fun activities, weekend festivals that are going across these states that are fun options for you. I got a no-brainer. I mean, for my favorite one, though. I got a no-brainer for you. But that's coming up here in a little bit. That's going to be in Wisconsin. First of all, it is Aquatennial this weekend. Lots of stuff going on. Till tomorrow, I believe it is, or the 24th. Is it actually till – yeah, it's till Sunday. So the Aquatennial in Minneapolis going on. In Owatonna, and for all the people on the network, that's where Owl City is from. That's right, Owatonna, Owl City, the famous music guy. Gem Days in Owatonna. Ice Cream Social, Old Car Cruisin', Crazy Days, Sidewalk Sales, Kitty Parade, Food Vendors, Music, and more. Doesn't sound that bad. I think the best one in Minnesota, not the best one this week, but the best one in Minnesota, have you ever been to beautiful Hoyt Lakes, Brett?
I have not, no.
Up on the range there? Oh, up there and there. Oh, yeah, it's up there. Oh, it's so nice when they have the festival. They've got the 2022 Hoyt Lakes Water Carnival. July, going through the 24th, see the fun family weekend at the Hoyt Lakes Water Carnival going on. Only $10 for the entire weekend. Get you to all the events. And on Sunday at the Hoyt Lakes Water Festival, build your own Sunday bar. What you can have the toppings of your choice. What are you putting on your Sunday, Brett?
What are our choices?
You can have any choice you want.
Any choices?
I like chocolate hot fudge, and I like kind of the traditional sundae. I had a really good banana split one time with fresh pineapple, fresh strawberries, and chocolate. That was delicious. Really, if you get all real pineapple, real strawberries, that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, generally I would mix that with some sort of chocolate on there. Yeah, probably chocolate fudge.
I thought you were about to say mix it with some booze. Yeah,
yes.
Little gin. Sounds delicious. To our friends in Wisconsin, here are the three best I found, and one here is and you're not going to be surprised. You're not going to be surprised, Brett. You know me. You know me way too well. First of all, down on the west side of Wisconsin, the La Crosse Storytelling Festival. This sounds nice. The 19th annual Storytelling Festival. Goes on today and tomorrow. Story. It's the first one they ever did in Wisconsin. They've been doing it for 19 years. Proud to bring the national storytelling talent of Jeff Doyle, Pippa White, and Kay Whedon to the La Crosse area. That's quite nice. That's a nice little get. It sounds like a good time. If you heard Devil Radio yesterday, Wisconsin, they've got tons of county fairs going on. But I'm going to go with the Devil Radio guys. They're at the Waukesha County Fair. That sounded a lot of fun. County fairs are great. They're great. I don't know if Crute stopped eating the deep fried food. It sounds like he was indulging. Was Pilot down there? Is Robert Pilot down there too? It sounded like he was.
Yeah, I know he's out and about and traveling during the next week or so.
Oh, man.
Maybe he'll make his way over there.
Guys, we can try to have my show down there. I'm not against going to Waukesha for the county fair. That is going on today, tomorrow, and Sunday. The oldest fair in the state of Wisconsin, by the way. Nice. 180 years.
That's the Waukesha?
Yeah. Fair? How? Oh, how 180, man.
180. Yeah, you're looking at 1840s.
1840s, wow. But our winner, Brett, it's time to head to Iron River. It's the Iron River Blueberry Festival. Yes. Delicious blueberries everywhere.
Unless it's like that other festival and they don't have any blueberries.
Ely Blueberry Festival, yeah, they've stepped their game up a little bit better. But we have to head out US 2 to Iron River. The festival kicks off on Saturday morning with the Kids Tractor Pull Contest. Kids got to pull a tractor? Wow, that's very Conan. The fun continues with rides, concessions, arts, crafts, games, raffle tickets, blueberry pies. Yes, music and entertainment, pie eating contest, coronation of the Blueberry Queen. How you doing? How you doing, Blueberry Queen? A pyro music fireworks around the day. And Sunday, they start the day off with a polka mass. A polka mass. Okay, you had me at Blueberry. I fell in love with you with polka mass. That sounds outstanding. So we might have to do a road trip to Iron River this weekend. and catch the Iron River Blueberry Festival. It sounds outstanding.
We'll fire up the AM950 chopper.
I'll get you a date. They got a blueberry queen and some blueberry princesses. I'll get you a date. Okay, we'll do that. Stay with us. Devil Radio up next. We're back in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hour 2. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hour number 2 on your Friday. Got Ryan Winkler going to be joining us. Candidate of the day, the Hennepin County Attorney's Race. Coming up here this fall, we'll talk to him. Actually, the primary, the top two vote-getters will then face off in the general election in November. We'll talk to him about his decision to run and what he wants to champion there, as well as also we'll get you a little dancing here. I've got a little music in a salute to Senator Howley, the running senator.
And we're encouraging people to participate in this dance, too.
Oh, yeah. I think we all can participate in this dance. It's a little exercise class we're going to do here. Has anyone's sphincter been more clenched than Howley as he ran for his life? I don't think so. Those are – yeah! This morning he was trying to sell his coffee mug with his hand up. And I was like, dude, man, you're done. You're done, you freaking coward. You go out there and throw, it's the equivalent of throwing rocks at the beehive and then taking your younger brother and chucking him at the bees. Jerk. 952-946-6205. Uh-oh, there's been a casualty in the burger game. The owners of the St. Paul Eateries, Shamrock and the Nook, have renamed the former Matt Burke Burger, which boasts two patties and pepper cheese, into the more apolitical Double Stack Pepper Jack Burger. A manager has confirmed this as of Thursday. We've gotten a barrage of calls over Matt Burke. Certainly stirred up a lot, said Dan Casper, general manager of Shamrocks. Recently, service video showed Burke claiming that by encouraging women to work, American culture is also promoting abortion. Wow. And that's only about one. I don't even know. Is that the worst thing he said in the last few days? Yeah, he's just a peach. He compared legal abortion to slavery, dismissed a rape exemption to abortion bans by saying two wrongs is not going to make it right. His comments have reached Vanity Fair and The View. Then he came out and he used the word savage in reference to the Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, who's Native American. And he basically tries to mansplain womanhood to women. God. Hey, chicky poos, let me tell you about being a chick, okay? Jesus Christ. I'm paraphrasing, but not by much. And then he had a disastrous another interview yesterday where he basically, the way it came across was, I want rape victims to carry that baby. That's real strong. That's more than I would do. What? You absolute jackass. Oh, God. Anyway, Casper said the two bars still love Burke and appreciate his support over the years, and they called him to give him a heads up. The Nook is across the street from Crete and Durham Hall, the Catholic school which Burke graduated in 1994. Casper said they want customers to know they can come to the bars without worrying about anyone's politics. Well, okay, come on out and eat Shamrocks. Don't worry about left or right politics. Just come out and eat. Casper implored customers. All right. The fact that this is an organization that apparently loves you, and they can't distance themselves fast enough away from you, it tells you everything about how toxic that. Think about that. I want to put that in perspective. They love the guy. They basically admit that. Oh, we're still big fans of him. They've got his personal phone number, apparently, and called him and told him, give him the heads up, we have to change these things. So let me ask you this. How many calls do you think they were getting saying, I'm never coming back there again because you got the Burke Burger? Are you kidding me? I got to believe it was pretty substantial for businesses that love Matt Burke to actually say, I'm sorry, this is killing us. It's got to be a lot.
I would think, yeah, probably in that case.
It's got to be a lot. 952-946-6205. So, there is another story out here about business, which I want people to get ready for the future. This new conservative Supreme Court-driven America where, yep, even your basic rights that you've been having forever are now going to be infringed on. And we start in Minnesota, a couple that was there that apparently is a little upset about what happened at one of the nation's largest pharmacy chains. Walgreens Company has been facing a groundswell of criticism in the battle over reproductive rights since the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade stoked heightened concern over access to contraception and certain medications. Now, I want to make sure we're clear about one thing. You go into a pharmacy in this city, in this state, there is a section for contraception. This isn't a fringe product. This is something that's been out there for years. This is something that's, yeah. It's something that's been out there for years. I mean, come on. I mean, it's a common product. Criticism took a new tenor earlier this month when a Walgreens cashier in Hayward, Wisconsin, refused to sell condoms to a shopper from Minneapolis based on religious grounds. Minneapolis resident Nate Pence said he and his wife were headed to the cabin on Sunday when they stopped at Walgreens to pick up a few things, including some condoms. Pence says his wife, Jess, was at the cash register when the store employee, who appeared to be a man in his 50s, said he couldn't sell her that product. "We can, but I won't because of my faith," he recounted the cashier's exact words on Twitter. The employee offered to ring up everything except the condoms, but Jess declined, according to Pence. To purchase the contraceptions, the employee said, Jess would need to be helped by a store manager. So I want to stop there because the way this story is played out, it's not as if this person said, I'll tell you what. Okay, and by the way, so this would not be a story if this individual would have said, I'm sorry, can you excuse me for a quick second? I'll be right back. Goes back, finds the manager, says, manager, I don't want to necessarily say this out loud, but you know, that person over there, they're getting something I disagree with. Could you go ring up that customer? And done. Manager comes in, says, great, I'm here to, I'll take care of the rest of this order. Thank you very much. And boom. Would anyone even care? No. The most important thing for this guy was to basically tell you about my religious beliefs, forcing religion on others. The second thing about this, which kind of comes across, at least from this presentation of what happened via Bring Me the News, is that the employee offered to ring up everything except the condoms, just declined. At that point, the purchase of the contraceptions, the employee said that he would need to talk to the store manager. So it's almost as if what it sounds like he has said is that, I'm sorry, I'm not going to ring that up for you. I'm not going to ring that up for you. And it doesn't sound like at any point he said, do you want this product? Because I can't do it. I can get a manager here. It sounds like he was trying to send them out of the store without a product which they have a right to buy. That's what it sounds like. It wasn't until after they said, okay, they basically declined to get everything but the condoms. Then he said, well, let me get the store manager. What would have happened there if the store manager wasn't there? Or was would he have basically, they can't buy a legal product in the state of Wisconsin? This is not, Walgreens, I'm going to read some stuff here from Walgreens, but this doesn't sound like anything other than a person who wanted to make, let me tell you liberals from Minneapolis, St. Paul, how things work here in Hayward. That's what it sounds like. Because like I said, they could have come to the counter. The guy sees condoms, says, doesn't say a thing. He says, can you excuse me for a moment? Goes get the manager, say, can you ring that up? I don't want to ring up condoms. Manager comes up, rings up the condoms, and done. No one is posting about this. No one cares about this. The most important thing for this guy was to tell them about his religion, and then it sounds like he was not willing to call a manager. It was just, I'm not going to ring that up. And it's when they basically say, well, we won't take anything then, that he finds that I guess we can call a manager. Wow. That's what at least it sounds like. The manager came up, rang up the rest of the order. Pence kind of described the experience as embarrassing. Absolutely. Walgreens did not respond to bring me in the news request for the comment, but it did tell NBC News that the employee's action did not violate store policy. Our policies are designed to ensure we meet the needs of our patients and customers while respecting the religious and moral beliefs of our team members, the spokesperson told NBC. The instances are rare, however, when a team member has a moral or religious conviction without completing the transaction. They are required to refer that customer to another employee or manager on duty who will complete the transaction, which is what occurred in this instance. No. What occurred in this – no, that would be what I described, which was, can you excuse me for a quick second? Quietly go to the manager. Can you ring this one up? I'm not okay with that. That would have been what you said. What happened here is, I'm not going to ring that up because my God says that's evil. Well, and I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of what it sounds like. And they say, well, I'll ring up everything else but that. And they said, no, then we're not going to ring anything else up. Then he went and got someone else and made a big deal out of it, a big show. Is that the policy? Because that doesn't sound like what the Walgreens policy is on this. There has been the went viral on social media. There was even a pocket protest outside of Hayward this week. Hashtag boycott Walgreens trended on Twitter after Occupy Democrats, a left-wing media outlet, called on followers to ban the store. Nate and Jess Pence, who are both in their 30s, recently celebrated their 17th wedding anniversary. So once again, this is a let's talk about that element of it right now, because this is the new world. Courtesy of the Republican Party. This is the Scott Jensen, the Matt Burke, the Schultz, the Kim Crockett, all the Republicans. This is their world that's going to come to fruition if it happens. And it's not going to be in just Hayward, Wisconsin. It's going to be everywhere. You can have a married couple, 17 years married, which isn't that the Jesus in your version of Christianity? Jesus is smiling. 17 years, married couple, just they don't want to have kids. Well, I'm going to dictate and force my faith on you by telling you I'm not going to sell you this. And once again, he could have avoided this whole thing if he just said, excuse me one quick second, doesn't say anything about his religion, doesn't do anything, just says, I'm going to have the manager ring this up. I'll be right back. You think to yourself, what do you think? You think, oh, the guy has to go to the bathroom or something like that. No one cares. The important element of this for him was telling these people his religion was, my religion tells me you're a sinner, so you can't have it. Paraphrasing. Like I said, paraphrasing. This is a 17-year married couple. I mean, what? Talk about forcing religion on people. And once again, he never went and got the manager right away. He basically said, I'll ring up everything else but this. That doesn't sound like Walgreens policies. That sounds like Mr. Broomstick up his backside's policies. That's what it sounds like. Mr. I'm abusing my religious faith by basically using it to condemn others for things I disagree with. I find this really disturbing in a discussion, because this is what the Republicans are going to have happen. The Republicans are, isn't this great? People are forcing their religious beliefs. And if we can get enough people working at a store where everyone has a religious conflict, well, then no one can buy it. Isn't it great? We'll get back to that in a quick sec here. In discussing why they chose to share their experience, Pence said he worries about how similar interaction might have influenced someone else's reproductive choices, especially a young adult. Because once again, they weren't buying anything illegal. And once again, this guy didn't get the manager. It doesn't sound like he got the manager right away. His initial stance was, we ain't going to sell it to you. So maybe they are not as assertive or whatever the reason is that causes them not to purchase, to be intimidated, to try to do it, or don't do it, or don't try to do it later. There are a lot of reasons for protection to continue. It's just kind of appalling thing that someone would choose to stick their nose in someone else's business that way. It absolutely is. Now, Walgreens, I understand you have a policy. You clearly need some immediate remedial training with this jackass up there in Hayward, this moron up there, because that I don't think is what your policy states. That basically, telling people I can't do this because it's against my religious. I imagine your policy is excuse yourself, go find a manager, let the manager ring it up, and walk away. Not to sit there and say, my God thinks you're a sinner if I sell you that product, so I'm not going to do it. They're a married couple, you uptight jackass. What's your problem, man? That is the Republican. This is what the Republicans want in this world. It is. And if I could take a quick little moment, a quick little side note. There are a lot of Republicans out there right now who are probably going, isn't this guy great? Praise Jeebus. You know, isn't it there? He's making a stand. Funny story. A few years ago, there were Muslim people that wanted to work at certain grocery stores and Targets and stuff like that, who did not want to have to work in an environment where they had to touch pork products because that's against their religion. Let me think back. What was the Republicans' response to that individual invoking their religious desires on their men? Oh, that's right. They were very intolerant. You better touch my bacon or else. I made them touch pork products. Remember that? I remember that. I remember you clowns. But now all of a sudden when someone's religion upset, he's an angel. Screw you all, okay? And I'm saying this as a Christian, okay? You guys are wrong, and you shouldn't be forcing your religion on anyone else, okay? And no, when a Muslim person just doesn't want to work in a certain position, Target, in that example, found plenty of places for them to work where they didn't violate their rights. They sure as heck didn't put that guy on the cash register to sit there and basically, let me tell you about my God. No, you didn't do that. They did not do that. So, this is the Republican world. This is what the Republicans want. This is why everyone needs to vote come November. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Once again, I am basing my comments on that story from Bring Me the News. And if that's how it went down, that's, like I said, he could have easily said, excuse me for a quick moment. Gone, got the manager, said, there's a customer over there that's going to buy something that I don't really feel comfortable. Okay, fine. No one says anything. I'll take care of your order. They would have think, oh, he had to go to the bathroom or something like that. That would have been it. And instead, he went out there and said, my religion tells me I can't sell this to you. And then initially says, I'll ring up everything but that. Well, that's not giving them the option of buying a product, which is legal to buy. There. That sounds like he was basically trying to send them out the door with the product, and Jesus is smiling on me because I stopped a married couple from getting a condom. No. I do not. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Gene is in North East Minneapolis, wanted to chime in. Welcome on in, Gene.
Hey, love that last segment. And couple that with the fact that the U.S. birth rates are not replacing the death rates, and what we have is a government breeding program to keep capitalism alive because it has to have growth. It's just, and what did the guy interview her? Did she ask her what she was using them for? Whether she had kids already?
Well, it's like I said,
they get interviewed. It's crazy.
Well, and thank you very much, Gene. I appreciate that. It's their 17th wedding anniversary. They've been married for 17 years. And if I can go to this, I think there's a court ruling of the none of your damn business versus reality, okay? How about that one? You know, like I said, fine. Well, first of all, I make this argument. If this is really a big problem for you, maybe you shouldn't work at Walgreens. But it's the job you've got. That's fine. I don't have a problem with you having a problem with this. You just don't need to make it a big show. And then you sure don't need to try to send them out the door without the legal product that they can buy. Your natural response should be, excuse me a moment. I need to go talk to the manager. Go talk to the manager. Manager comes, rings you up. Religion's never brought into it. They get their product. They walk out the door. That's how I would seem to be. And that's not what seems to have happened here. Dan is in Eden Prairie, wanted to chime in. Welcome on in, Dan.
Hey, Matt. So my comment is going to be for those that didn't figure out it in sixth grade, the use of a condom should be appreciated by anti-abortionists because it stops any whatever fetus embryo from being created.
Unwanted pregnancies.
Other birth control.
Yeah. It stops unwanted pregnancies. And it's absolutely there. And you see, and Dan, thank you very much. You're exactly right. It's that this is, you would think to yourself, if you are against abortion being a right that people have, then you think you would be for birth control to prevent that from happening. But you see, one of the things I've always said is there's this interesting dynamic within the far-right Christian extremists. They want to look at chocolate as perfectly fine. That can be thrown away. Peanut butter, that's perfectly fine. That can be thrown away. But then when you make a Reese's peanut butter cup, well, that's divine. Okay. See what I got there? You shall not violate the Reese's peanut butter cup. Reese's Pieces, that's a completely different thing. I can't do that joke. I will not do that joke. I want to still work in this business. I cannot do that joke. Needless to say, I'll move on. No, but now we're getting to the point where this guy seems to be of this mindset that, okay, we're going to start kicking open the doors of private residences and checking people's sheets and houses for unacceptable discharges, I guess would be the thing. How dare you? Is that where we're going here? Because I just... Oh, now Ron has asked me to do the joke. I can't do the joke. That joke will get me fired. If a Reese's peanut butter cup is... Oh, never mind. The Reese's pieces... Well, no. Hey, I've been to Europe. Okay. Last thing I did want to mention here today is something that... I read this story the other day, and I posted the story, and I just... Okay, come on. An Otsego man has been charged after he allegedly drove an ATV drunk and crashed, killing a 12-year-old passenger. Austin Copsey, 37, has been charged with one count of criminal vehicular homicide in July 16th crash that killed Jesse Hopper or Hooper. Hooper is described in the GoFundMe as a unique, charismatic, curious young man who unfortunately has passed away. According to the criminal complaint, police responded to a crash involving an ATV on 78th Avenue Northeast in Otsego just after 10 p.m. on Saturday, July 16th. Wright County deputies found a Polaris ATV in a ditch near broken mailboxes. An investigation revealed that Compsey crashed the ATV into several mailboxes and a single post cemented to the ground, with the ATV then rolling multiple times in the ditch. Hooper was found in the ditch with critical injuries and died at the scene. Compsey was a visible wound in his head, was treated at the scene. Authorities also know that Compsey's speech was slurred and a strong odor of alcoholic beverage was coming from his breath. He admitted he'd been drinking prior to the crash, telling deputies he and Hooper were on their way to pick up his daughter and bring her to a neighborhood party. After submitting to a preliminary breath test, his blood alcohol content was at 0.19, over twice the legal limit in Minnesota. He'll make his first court appearance on August 5th. This is just the latest ATV crash that's led to someone dying. And a lot of times, it's young kids. Here's my point. Whenever, tragically, someone in North Minneapolis is killed, a young child is killed, the media in this city goes crazy. Justice for this young child. Justice for this. And I'm not saying that that's not appropriate. We should do everything we can to stop violent crime. We could stop everything to do these illegal guns. We should do these things and try to protect these kids. Absolutely. The problem I have is this happens, and I don't hear anyone with nearly the outrage at the epidemic of dead kids with ATVs. And this is becoming a freaking epidemic. No, it's just country life, Matt. You don't get us in the country. No, I've lived in the country. This is just stupidity. It's stupidity. It's a guy drunk who for some reason doesn't think he can get in a car but can get on another motorized vehicle and ends up killing someone. And this is not the only case. This stuff happens almost every freaking day in the state. And if it was in North Minneapolis, the media in this country or in this state would be going crazy. What are we going to do to stop this travesty? But because it doesn't, it happens in rural Minnesota, across the state, in every place. All of a sudden, it's a tragedy. It's a private tragedy. We can't really talk about it. No. We've got a real big freaking problem with ATVs and dead kids. That has to be addressed. It has to be. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. All right, I'm done with that. We'll take a break. Come on back. Candidate of the day is Ryan Winkler, Hennepin County Attorney. We'll talk with him in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show on a Friday. Some dancing coming up here in just a little bit. A workout. Now, usually we have Democrat of the Day. We don't have that today because the Hennepin County Attorney's race is a nonpartisan race, even though this next guest is someone we've had on Democrat of the Day multiple times. He is the House Majority Leader. He is also decided to run for Hennepin County Attorney. Representative Ryan Winkler is kind enough to join us today to talk about his campaign for Hennepin County Attorney. Representative, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
I'm happy to be here, Matt. How are you today?
Doing well. Good to run into you. I saw you at the parade a few weeks ago, and I said, I got to get you on the air to talk about the Hennepin County Attorney's race. I appreciate you taking some time to do so.
Sure.
Okay, obviously the first question here is, you are fairly high up in leadership in the Minnesota House. You are the majority leader. And outside of the speaker, you're basically the most powerful person there. You've, though, made the decision that it's time for a change. Why? Let's talk a little bit about that. Why did you make this decision to leave the Minnesota House and run for this race?
I have been a progressive Democrat ever since I got to the legislature, working on minimum wage, paid family and medical leave, fighting against the anti-marriage amendment, establishing marriage equality, working on every progressive cause that I could when I got to the House. And what I discovered really in 2020 was that all of those things widen the circle of inclusion and justice and economic opportunity, but we cannot do them if people feel they are unsafe and if state government, local government is not able to do its core mission, which is to keep our communities safe. And during the summer of 2020, I watched what happens when our public safety system is not functioning well, and that in many ways, the model that we've had in Minneapolis and surrounding areas, has been flawed and will no longer, do the minimum to keep us safe. And I feel like without strong leadership, at the local level, at Hennepin County, in the city of Minneapolis, we will not be the kind of successful community, the kind of inclusive community that I think we can be. And I was motivated to try to bring my leadership skills acquired over a lot of years to try to make that office function better.
It is, I think it is clear that there has to be some changes, especially over what's happened here in Minneapolis over the last few years. But obviously, what kind of changes and how those changes get implemented. Let's go with right away public safety. What would you like to do if you are Hennepin County Attorney with public safety in Hennepin County?
We have limited resources. We need to coordinate those resources better and make sure that we are tackling violent crimes first. So the governor talked yesterday about the backlog of evidence at the BCA. I've talked to police chiefs about their limited number of officers. We need to have the kind of coordination and prioritization of resources around violent crime that we need in order to address that issue, gun crime in particular. And we can't do that if we don't have strong partnerships. If all of these units of government are not functioning well together, if their leaders are not working well together, our public safety system will fail. And we need to make that a priority. If we cannot get a handle on what's going on in our city streets, if we can't get a handle on children being killed, gunshots being fired, guns being prolific throughout our neighborhoods and enforce those laws, we will not have the kind of community that we all believe in. And so I really think strong partnerships with law enforcement and the community is the only way to address crime. That's short term. Long term, we need to address the things that are driving crime to begin with, poverty, the lack of access to mental health resources, quality educations, jobs, you know, you name it. There is a way that in the long run, stronger investments in our communities and the people most disproportionately affected by crime and likely to be involved in the criminal justice system, those investments are the best long-term strategy.
It's interesting. I'm looking at your webpage, and one of the things it catches me is you make the point. It's like we get the attentions when a crime happens in a wealthier part of an affluent neighborhood in Minneapolis. But 87% of the victims of Minneapolis crime are people of color. 70% are African American. It is something that there has been a problem here. There's also this conundrum. I'm going to go with guns right away. That, you know, there's a lot of people, especially on the right in this state, that like to scream about guns, 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 pick up the guns. But when people then try to do that, then all of a sudden they go crazy because how dare you violate Second Amendment? You got to protect the guns. And you're like, okay, there's this paradox that seems to exist that, you know, the conservatives want this stuff to get fixed. But at the same time, when you do the most obvious thing, which is try to get these illegal guns off the streets, they even don't want the illegal guns rounded up. I mean, talk about how you can achieve something as a Hennepin County attorney on that level.
I mean, we do have existing gun laws. And Republicans, conservatives are always going to try to make a conservative attack against Democrats no matter what we do. My focus is on the communities that are being hurt by crime right now, the under-resourced neighborhoods where they're afraid of what might happen with their kids getting involved in crime. Those people say, when I talk to those neighborhoods, what I hear consistently is we want more police, but we want them to be better police who are serving us. Mm-hmm. They are not looking for a political argument, an ideological fight. The people in the neighborhoods, when I spend time talking with them across race, across immigration status, across economic status, the message is the same. We want to be safe, and we think a police system should be created to serve us.
You undeniably, police play a very major part within our society. The problem that we've had in Minneapolis is there are too many times where the police don't seem like police, but more of an occupying force if they are showing up at all. I understand staffing issues, and that's not necessarily the Hennepin County Attorney. That's the City Hall, and that's the mayor. But at the same time, you are going to have accountability here. Transparency, accountability. Currently, under the current system, and I know the DOJ investigation probably can change a lot of this when their findings come on down, but how do you work with a police union that seems to have very little interest in changing how their modus operandi is right now?
One thing that we changed when I was a legislator working on police reform in the summer of 2020 is to change police arbitration. This is talked about a lot. We changed who the people who are going to do the arbitration are and to make sure that they understand civil rights law as well as labor law. And so as we look to that system to change, I think there will be more accountability over time through our existing channels. The Post Board has expanded its licensing oversight role. I think that will help. I think the county attorney can help provide accountability by having a higher standard for using evidence in trial if it involves an officer who may have made false statements under oath, that kind of thing. And then I think we need to have clear accountability for charging decisions and a clear process if it's an officer who may be charged. There is definitely a role for the county attorney to help with police accountability. And there are some steps that are already underway that will take a while to bear fruit, but I think ultimately will help create a system of much greater accountability for policing. And it's important to note, when I talk to police leaders, when I talk to a lot of officers, they are not afraid of accountability. Mm-hmm. They are looking to be partners in making this work better. And I think the message of 2020, of what happened in this community, has been loud and clear to a lot of police leaders, and they are ready to find a way forward to keep us safe and to make their departments operate the way our communities expect them to operate.
I will piggyback on what you said. There are a lot of fantastic police departments out there, and there's the ones that don't mind being held accountable for their behavior. That's not what's going on in Minneapolis sometimes. And the last thing I'm going to ask you on public safety is this, the Jaleel Stallings incident. that wasn't just a failure of the police, which was a massive failure by the police, but it was also a failure by the prosecution. They knew he hadn't been doing what he was being accused of. They had the body cam footage. They knew it. And yet they still were trying to charge him with a crime. There has to be some – when it comes to the Hennepin County attorney, there's got to be some oversight of the prosecution itself to say that if we've got evidence that someone clearly didn't do the crime that people want us to charge them with, that we're not going to do that.
Yeah, there are two things I think that need to happen that charge illustrates. First of all, I think leadership change at the top of the county attorney's office can help shift a culture internally without assuming that all police statements are accurate or that any time there's an incident involving the police that the police are right. That change has to happen. And second, the county attorney's office, I think, needs a much more robust data collection system in place so that we can provide meaningful data. There can be greater transparency on all the discretionary decisions that are made throughout a prosecution. And I think whether you're on the right or you're on the left, having more robust data to show what's actually happening with charges, I think would benefit the public conversation and provide greater transparency.
Candidate of the day is Ryan Winkler. He is running, and the representative is running for the Hennepin County Attorney's race. Let's move away from public safety, cannabis legalization. That is something that you have been working on in the House. This is something that you want to try to carry over if you become Hennepin County Attorney, correct?
Yes, I think we need to stop wasting law enforcement resources on enforcing cannabis laws that people don't think should be the law of the land anyway.
We have edibles. The Republicans accidentally went with the Democrats and made edibles legal. And the reality is the state hasn't fallen off the cliff. It hasn't. It's been legal and everything seems to be going fine still.
Well, that's, of course, the experience of most states. There are often some hiccups as they get started with legalization. But with time, they absolutely figure this out. Our law is really just a partial door opening to cannabis with products that are derived from hemp. And we will have an opportunity. First of all, we've already seen how popular it is. We will have an opportunity to show that we can do this safely, that people are sensible about this, and it's a relatively low-risk product that people are able to buy. And I think this opens the door to full legalization, because once we are this far into the market being legal, it doesn't really make sense to hold back on other products as long as it's all safely regulated.
Republicans right now are, gleefully anticipating trying to install anti-abortion regulations here in the state of Minnesota, including basically forcing rape victims to basically carry their rapist children to term, which is just unconscionable. You have been a big, strong supporter of making sure we're prosecuting sexual assault to the nth degree here. Talk a little bit about that, what you would do as Hennepin County Attorney there.
Well, first of all, if somehow we ended up with criminal anti-abortion laws in Minnesota, I would not use the county attorney's office to prosecute them. Not only is that taking resources away from actual harm caused by people's violent behavior or fraudulent behavior, but it is a fundamental violation of rights. I don't care what the Supreme Court says. It is a violation of rights, and the county attorney's office will not be involved in prosecuting. The good news is we do have a state constitutional protection, but that's only as good as a Supreme Court majority at the state level is willing to uphold it. And we obviously have politicians like Matt Burke who are extremists on abortion and want nothing more than to get hold of state government to try to turn it against women and doctors. And we need to resist that at all levels, including at the Hennepin County Attorney's Office.
Oh, the Democrats' secret weapon this year is that entire Republican lineup on national and statewide races. They are a manna from heaven for the DFL. I'm hoping we're going to be okay, but everyone has to get out and vote. That's for sure. Coming up here in November. Let's also talk a little bit about the environment. I know this. You and I have talked about this as a representative in the House with Democrats of the day, but in the past, you have been a big advocate for protecting the environment. Talk about what the Hennepin County Attorney's Office can do to help in that front.
You know, when I have just showed up to listen to people talk about their neighborhood and things they're concerned about. One of the things I heard in North Minneapolis was why Northern Metals, which has been polluting the air in the neighborhood and harming people, has not been prosecuted for fraudulently filing environmental records with the PCA. That can happen. We can prosecute companies and individuals for violating our environmental laws. We can also use the county water protection statutes or ordinances related to watershed districts to better enforce water quality permits and water quality standards. So there are ways that the county attorney's office can have an environmental impact within the jurisdiction of Hennepin County. And we don't pay enough attention to those environmental justice issues, especially in neighborhoods where we have, redlined people in over time, provided not enough resources and not protected them from those kinds of harms.
I agree. There's a tendency to not, prosecute even the most, egregious violators of environmental laws. And I think that, especially in lower income communities. And I think that I agree wholeheartedly that has to change. We want to drive people to your website. Of course, we should mention there's a primary coming up here on August 9th. And correct me if I'm wrong. The top two vote getters for Hennepin County Attorney will then move on to the general election, correct?
That is correct.
All right.
There are seven candidates in the race. If you flip to the back of your ballot, you can vote for one. Obviously, I would like you to vote for Ryan Winkler. And you can vote for one person on the back and the top two move on. It's a nonpartisan race all the way through. So whether it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican voting in the primary, you can flip your ballot over and you can vote for one person. I would add for sheriff as well.
All right. And once again, it's the top two vote getters on August 9th, then move on to the general election in November. It's not my job here to tell anyone who to vote for. You need to educate yourself. Ryan Winkler's got a webpage out there with a lot of great information. Representative, what's the webpage they want to find if they want to find out more about your Hennepin County attorney's race?
It's just ryanwinkler.com. Very easy. JustMyName.com.
RyanWinkler.com. I will link to this on all the social media a little bit later on. Representative, I appreciate the time. Thank you very much for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Candidate of the day, Ryan Winkler, for Hennepin County Attorney's Race. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got some dancing to do. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Nobody but about me. Why you got to give me a fight?
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. No, I tell you what, that Hennepin County attorney's race, I think Winkler said it best. Whoever, there's going to have to be changes here. That the way that office has been run, and not just recently, I mean, over the last 10 years, it's, if you basically have zero accountability for a police force, this is what happens. And once again, I understand not every police officer in Minneapolis is bad. There's a lot of people there that are trying to do a lot of good. The problem is that you do have rot inside that department. And you have, when you get to the point where you're putting up a racist Christmas tree in the lobby of a precinct, that is a police department that is not afraid of any level of accountability at all. When you go to the Stallings prosecution, the brazenness of the attempt to charge Stallings with a crime in that case, how in the world? I mean, there's got to be some massive change there. And so far we've heard from multiple candidates. We'll, more want to get on the air, we'll get them on the air. But the Hennepin County attorney's race, this is one of the reasons why, even though I'm focusing more on the Minnesota House, Minnesota Senate, and the statewide races, as well as the U.S. House races, the reality is I'm going to focus on this one because there's going to have to be some monumental changes in that department. All right. So the best part, possibly, of the January 6th hearing last night, the comic relief, was Senator Josh Hawley running for his life after he encouraged the mob to attack the Capitol. And there have been a lot of great people that have put some music to that running. I posted the one from former Senator Al Franken. Now, I understand some people issues there, but the reality is it was the best because he put what is the best song to Josh Hawley running for his life. courtesy of the Benny Hill Show, Yakety Sax. Definitely. Definitely. There it is. So we're going to do the Josh Hawley, Benny Hill workout explosion on camera. This will take us out. Have a fantastic weekend. We will be back on a Monday. Till then, see ya.